This podcast is intended for financial professional use only. Although this podcast is sponsored by Pac Life Insurance Company, the opinions and views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not necessarily reflect Pac Life Insurance Company's views on any of the topics discussed. Pac Life Insurance Company is licensed to issue insurance policies in all states except New York. Product material availability and features may vary by state, and please do not forget to listen to the important disclosures at the end of this podcast.
You know, everyone wants a plan after the fact, right? But we all know it's easier to do the planning up front and just have that flexibility, right? If we need to make a change. So I think it's very important to get the planning done.
Hear how this breakaway firm used DPL's tools and technology to make the transition to independence. You're listening to Advisor Revelations.
Would like to welcome everyone to the Advisor Revelations podcast. My name is Amy Arnett, and I am director of the insurance division at DPL. Today, we have a guest, Brett Riddle, who is a senior analyst at Pacific Life. And today, we're going to be talking about maximizing federal estate tax exemption. Brett, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you for having me on.
One quick reminder before we start our discussion today, I want listeners to please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite streaming app for updates. If anything we talk about today interests you, be sure to connect with a DPL consultant on our website, dplfp.com. All right, Brett, so our listeners have a better understanding of the type of firm you're with and your experience. Can you share a little more about yourself and Pacific Life? Maybe tell us a little bit about your background, firm type, that type of information.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the warm welcome. I'm from Pacific Life. We're a life insurance carrier, so that's what kind of firm we are. More specifically, I'm with the Advanced Designs Unit. We're a group of life insurance experts, and we specialize in advanced planning concepts that involve life insurance in the areas of estate planning, business planning, executive compensation, charitable planning, premium finance, and life insurance and qualified plans. And really, we're here to find solutions to the most complex life insurance cases and questions.
All right, great. What would you say is the federal estate tax exemption and sunset rule? What would you tell us about that?
Well, I would start with a little history lesson, okay? So we have an exemption amount, right? Today it's $13.61 million, but the history lesson part of this is that, you know, a couple decades ago, it was as low as $600,000, right? So there was a lot more people that had this estate tax liability federally, right? So if you were above that $600,000, you were in that tax range and you would have an estate tax, or your estate would, once you passed away, right? And so today it's at $13.61 million, okay? In the past decade, there's been some changes. Obviously, we're at this $13.61 million now. But like I said, it was at $600,000. And then there was a legislation called the ATR that was passed in January of 2013, and that increased the federal estate tax exemption to $5 million per person, indexed for inflation, and that set the top estate, gift, and generation skipping tax at 40%, but it also established portability of the estate tax exemption amount. And then, so now we're dealing with a doubled temporary exemption, right? Because in January 2018, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 was passed, and it increased the federal state gift and generation skipping transfer tax exemption amounts to $10 million per person indexed for inflation. And so that's how we get to that today's level of $13.61 million for an individual.
So what would you say is the potential opportunity here?
So for high-level net worth individuals, specifically those that have or might have a potential estate tax problem now, have a golden opportunity to transfer at least $6.8 million. And also, married couples can double their exemption, right? So their extra amount could be up to $13.61 million based on that doubling, since their exemption today is $27.22 million. So they can make these transfers free of federal estate taxes and transfer their wealth and leave a legacy to their family and for future generations. But this sunset is on the books to happen now, so they can only accomplish this if they act before this legislation is set to expire at the end of 2025. And for those that don't act, they risk losing the benefit of using this currently doubled exemption amount, and they miss out on this opportunity that potentially could be once in a lifetime.
So their timeline then to act is short. We've got, just a little over a year before the sunset rule is implemented, correct?
Right. It starts at the beginning of 2026. So they have the remainder of this year and 2025 to to use the temporary doubling of the federal estate tax exemption. So remember, it will revert back to that previous level of $5 million index for inflation and then $10 million index for inflation for a married couple. We're thinking that it's going to be around $7 million potentially.
Okay. All right. So what are some potential issues to overcome when taking advantage of the temporary double federal estate tax exemption?
So there are two common issues that we see a lot in our case consultations that come up for clients. First, it's basically an all or nothing proposition of using the gift tax exemption. You either use it or you lose it when it comes to the lifetime exemption amount. And the second problem is people don't like giving up control and access to their assets. These are gifts, right? When you give up a gift, you lose control and access to whatever that asset is that you gift, right? So to speak specifically to issue one, it's an all or nothing proposition. We like to use the analogy of the original exemption amount of $5 million being milk, and then that temporary extra amount being the cream on top, right? In an ideal world, an individual would skim the cream off the top and make a gift of the extra exemption amount now before the legislation expires, and they would save that original exemption amount for later use or when they pass away, right? However, the IRS has issued guidance clarifying that this method of taking off the top and saving the rest for later when it comes to the lifetime gifting tactic won't work. The IRS guidance indicates that any use of this lifetime gifting exemption, it draws from the bottom or from zero. In other words, any pre-2026 gift would effectively reduce your post-exemption amount, thus leaving the individual with no little or no remaining exemption amount after 2025. So it truly is a use it or lose it venture when we're talking about this first issue.
Okay. Well, you mentioned another problem, a second problem, that people don't like giving up control and access to their assets, no matter their wealth. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. So taking advantage of the temporary doubling of the estate exemption is going to require using most likely a lot of your exemption amount before this legislation expires or is repealed, right? So a lot of wealthy people are nervous to make such significant transfers of assets due to their fear of giving up control and or running out of money during their lives. So regardless of how irrational that fear may be, even in some cases of extreme wealth, it is still a concern that needs to be properly addressed. So this is where I like to speak about the use it or lose it SLAT, or lifetime access trust. And it comes into play, especially for married couples. And this is a popular estate planning strategy that is intended to permit married couples to gift away significant assets and take advantage of the temporary doubling of the federal estate tax exemption without necessarily giving up total control and access of the gifted assets. So the use it or lose it SLAT, it involves one spouse that is, I would refer to as the grantor, the donor spouse, and they establish this trust for the benefit of the spousal beneficiary. So they're the lifetime beneficiary of this trust and for future their children. The grantor spouse would gift their entire federal estate tax exemption in amount to the trust. So if it was this year, it'd be $13.61 million. And since the other spouse is the beneficiary of this trust, the couple could continue enjoying access indirectly to the gifted property by access that's allowed to that lifetime spousal beneficiary to the trust, right?
Okay. So how may control and flexibility be achieved?
Well, the first one is by having that spousal beneficiary as trustee of the SLAT, right? This provides a married couple with greater control over the assets. And this can be even more flexibility involved by not naming the spousal beneficiary specifically by name in the trust document. I've heard of this be referred to as a floating spousal provision. You say my current spouse, something like that. And the estate planning attorneys, you know, they do that. I always defer to the estate planning attorneys how to do it the right way. But this would allow a new spouse to step in as the lifetime beneficiary of the SLAT in the event of a divorce or a death of the spousal beneficiary prior to the grantor spouse passing away. And it alleviates some of the concern of the grantor spouse losing indirect access to the assets in the trust, right? Second, I would include potentially a grantor loan provision in the trust. And this would alleviate also the concern of the grantor spouse losing that indirect access to the assets or funds in the event of a death or a divorce of the spousal beneficiary. And it would permit the trustee to make these arm length loans back to the grantor spouse to provide the access to the assets. And lastly, I would maybe consider having each spouse create a slat for the benefit of the other spouse. This could help alleviate the concern of the grantor spouse losing indirect access to funds or assets in a trust, right, that the grantor established, because whoever it was, they would still have direct access to the other trust that they're the lifetime beneficiary of, right? But if each spouse establishes a slat for the benefit of each other, the IRS could apply the reciprocal trust doctrine. So we'd really want to work with our attorneys, our clients' attorneys, of course, to make sure we navigate that. There's a couple factors that go into it: time, differences of beneficiaries, different fiduciary duties, different trustees, different withdrawal rights, different distribution standards. So that's some of the stuff. But I always defer to the client's tax and legal advisors to carefully consider the reciprocal trust doctrine when we're talking about creating two irrevocable trusts for the benefit that we're looking to seek.
Right, right. So you definitely want to make sure that the attorney is, their attorney, the client's attorneys are familiar with slats and how they should be established and set up. That's very important. Do you feel like there's a potential role of life insurance in the use of a, you know, use it or lose it type slat?
Yes, I could see two instances of use where life insurance could play a role inside of a spousal lifetime access trust. One option, first, if liquidity is needed for estate taxes or there is a desire to create a legacy for children or future generations, is to have life insurance that is death benefit oriented policy in the trust, right? Either a portion of the assets in the trust can be used to purchase the life insurance, or maybe some income from an asset that's already inside of the trust could be used to pay the life insurance premiums. If there's a desire to use insurance proceeds to benefit future generations, generation skipping provisions could also be included in the trust to create an even more powerful wealth transfer tool. And then secondly, another option would be to purchase a cash accumulation focused life insurance policy that's designed, you know, for maximum premium, minimum death benefit, that takes advantage of the tax deferred froth for at least a portion of the trust assets, which would create a tax deferred asset that could potentially be accessed income tax free for the benefit of that lifetime spousal beneficiary, the children, and perhaps even grandchildren. Depending on the age of the married couple, maybe it makes sense to insure one or both spouses. But I would use the caveat, life insurance policies on a single life are normally used in a slat. Survivorship life insurance may be used as well. But however, to avoid including the life insurance in the taxable estate, neither spouse should serve as the trustee or the co-trustee over that life insurance policy in the trust, just to avoid any instances of ownership that would make the policy revert back or be included in the estate at death, right?
So keep in mind with, you know, the sunset rule is coming up, there's going to be a change. You know, when we're working with clients and advisors are working with clients, especially if they're younger, right? If they're in their mid-40s or 50s, we've definitely come across some multi-generational wealth where not only do the parents need to start looking some type of protection, even the kids do, but we don't really know. I mean, this could change again. This sunset rule will come into play, but it could change 10 years from now. It could change 15 years from now. You know, it could change 20 years from now. We don't know what the future holds. But I mean, how do you feel about someone planning for that in their mid-40s and early 50s as compared to someone planning for that in their 60s or early 70s?
Well, I think holistically, I like planning, you know, even from a basic estate planning point, right? Just kind of having dotting all your I's and crossing your T's, right? The earlier you do it, the easier it is to have flexibility, right? You know, there could be a change in the estate tax. It could be repealed, it could be lowered, it could be raised, right? But as of right now, the sunset is law, and it would take an act of Congress to change that as of right now, right? So, you know, we have an election coming up and all that. So there's going to be a lot of talk about that. But I think, like, I'm going back, a holistic approach always helps. Planning is very important until, you know, everyone wants a plan after the fact, right? But we all know it's easier to do the planning up front and just have that flexibility, right? If we need to make a change. So I think it's very important to get the planning done. You know, as the sunset gets closer, estate planning attorneys, CPAs, you know, other professional advisors are going to start getting at close to capacity and have to start turning down business, right? So the good thing about the slat, it still provides that flexibility, right? So even if there is a change, you can still access the assets, you know, but you're also covered if there isn't a change too, right? So, but if you didn't have a slat, right, and the sunset happens, you could be out of luck, right? You could be making $6-7 million mistake, right? If you're estate tax potentially liable, right? So that's kind of my thoughts on it. I think it's always better to be planned, do your planning ahead of time.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And typically, you know, the younger you are, the healthier you are.
Yeah.
And when it comes in to play with life insurance, you know, that's one of the qualifying triggers, right? In order to get the insurance in place, you've got to be healthy enough to qualify for it. What kind of details are important to gather as an advisor when making a determination on how much insurance is the right amount of insurance? What would your thoughts be there?
Definitely. I always defer to underwriting and stuff, but I would want to know the net worth, right? What the goals are, what kind of coverage we're seeking, right? Like I said, kind of, you know, are we doing cash accumulation? Are we doing death benefit? Are we using this as a wealth transfer tool, right? Life insurance is a great wealth transfer tool, right? Because of those tax advantages, right? If we utilize all, you know, the tax-free advantages of them, the utilization of life insurance is very strong as a wealth transfer tool. So that's kind of the questions I ask. You know, looking at a specific case, I want to know what's in the net worth, what kind of assets are we dealing with? You know, kind of what are the goals? Is there a business involved? Is it just straight estate planning? You know, is there a life need, right? Because life insurance, and like going back to the previous question, life insurance is good from just a basic estate planning tool also, right? Say you have life insurance with a LTC rider. That could be a wealth transfer tool, right? You're using the LTC accelerated benefits instead of using your assets potentially, right? And you can transfer your assets still to your beneficiaries when you pass away, right? So that's just a basic example of a wealth transfer tool that life insurance can do just on the basic level. So that's kind of what I look at just from a holistic approach.
And I'm asking this question because I actually came across it a couple of weeks ago with an advisor where it is multi-generational wealth. So the grandparents are looking to provide insurance on kids so that the grandkids, that wealth still transfers beyond to the grandkids. So they're looking at doing individual insurance policies on the kids, but it's all focused for, you know, that generational wealth transfer. So I guess all of that, you know, you can accomplish that with individual insurance as well as second to die insurance.
Yep.
And another question, when someone is younger and right now their estate or their net worth, you know, might be, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 million, whatever it might be, but they stand to inherit a significant amount of money. So when you look at putting insurance in place for them, do you know? This is probably an underwriting question, but can you take into consideration the future value of that net estate when you're applying today and buy a higher amount of coverage?
Potentially, you know, like I said, I'll defer to underwriting on those kind of questions, but I've heard, and you know, it could be considered as a factor, right? That's why they have these cover sheets and cover letters, right? Because there are circumstances where that plays a factor. If you're due to inherit a great sum of wealth, that could definitely go into that whole approach and the amount that could be used, right, for future planning. And like you said, you know, there's with this estate tax sunset, I see three potential groups of clients that could be affected, right? We have the ultra wealthy that have an estate tax problem right now.
Right.
So with the current level. And then, so they're going to have an estate tax problem still. Then we're going to have the next group that right now they don't have an estate tax problem, but they will once the sunset happens, right? And then we're going to have the group, like you just mentioned, that they don't have an estate tax problem now, but at the rate that wealth grows, they potentially will have an estate tax problem at some point in the future, right? And that gets back to one of the previous questions about, you know, it's really good to get ahead of the eight ball, right? And get this planning done beforehand before it's too late. or before you need it, right? So that's kind of my thoughts on that.
Well, we appreciate that, Brett. And I appreciate your time today. And we appreciate everybody's tuning in today and listening to us. You know, let's connect at dplfp.com and subscribe for more episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts. And don't ever hesitate to reach out to us for any of your estate planning, insurance, long-term care, insurance needs. We're here to help. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. To hear more advisor revelations, go to dplfp.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming app.
PacLife is a product provider. It is not a fiduciary and therefore does not give advice or make recommendations regarding insurance or investment products. PacLife, its affiliates, their distributors, and respective representatives do not provide tax, accounting, or legal advice. Any taxpayer should seek advice based on the taxpayer's particular circumstances from any independent tax advisor or attorney. PacLife Insurance Company is licensed to issue insurance products in all states except New York. Product material availability and features may vary by state. The home office for PacLife Insurance Company is located in Omaha, Nebraska. DPL is not an affiliated company of PacLife Insurance Company.